Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
This is a Joy 94.9 podcast presented by Paul Anthony with the assistance of the Gay and Lesbian Liaison Officers, Victoria Police, Crime Stoppers and Joy 94.9 working together to make our community safe.
Keeping you and the community informed. Joy 94.9.
Paul Anthony with you on the conch. In the studio with me every week, Gay and Lesbian Liaison Officer Sergeant Scott Davis.
Thank you, Paul.
Each week, Scotty, we look at getting a special guest in. This week, we're having a chat to the State Bicycle Coordinator for Victoria Police. Welcome to Joy 94.9, Sergeant Artie Lavos.
Hi, Paul. Hi, Scott.
Let's start from the very beginning. Can you remember entering the police academy, and what year was it?
It was in 1995, and I do remember it was a very cold and dark morning that morning. I was very nervous, actually.
What time of the year was it?
June.
Yes, so, that would be a fairly dark time.
Yeah.
The academy is not exactly the warmest place in regards to temperature-wise or emotional, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. You walk in there, it's not very welcoming at all. You see this big chapel that just greets you and you think, oh, this is a bit daunting.
Yes.
What were you expecting prior to going?
I don't think I had any expectations, to be quite honest. It was a really brief process within application and actually walking in the door. I think it was less than 3 months, so it was very quick.
Well, you were lucky because I was about a 12-month process to get in.
Yeah.
What was your thought process? Why did you want to join Victoria Police?
Oh, look, it wasn't a lifelong dream or anything like that. I'd worked in several different fields, being retail, local government, a few other endeavours. Just something I saw advertised once in the newspaper on a weekend. I thought, this sounds interesting. So,
and how many years now?
Coming up to 15.
So did you expect that it would be 15 years?
Yeah, I was hoping. Yeah, I was looking for that career and I think I've pretty much found it. So,
what were you doing prior to the 15 years?
Oh, goodness. Well, I worked with Meyer in retail. I worked with Just Jeans in retail. I worked for a little while with the railways, as it was back then, for a little while. And then the City of Mordialloc as a ranger. And then the police force. So, quite diverse.
And did you go back and remember all the people you'd met in the past?
No.
Yes. Can you remember your first training station?
Yeah, Dandenong. I can never forget it. Yeah, very busy. Very busy and an eye-opener, I think. Certainly, Scotty will vouch for areas like Dandenong, very busy police stations and a good learning curve.
My first training station was a neighbour there, Springvale. Not quite as busy as Dandenong, but still very, very busy, yeah.
When you say busy, do you mean just a lot of crimes being committed or...?
Crime, there's a lot of community issues, there's a diverse community out there, and it's a big area demographically. So
everything that happens in policing happens in Dandenong.
Yeah, so
did you get to choose to go to Dandenong to start off with?
We had three choices, and I think Dandenong was my third, so someone didn't like
you're probably stupid to put it even in as your third, though.
Yeah, I guess.
But having said that, did you enjoy your time at Dandenong?
I loved it.
Yeah, because you learn a lot by going to a station like that, don't you?
Absolutely.
What do you think is probably one of the biggest things you learnt from Dandenong?
Oh, look, I think life experience itself. You think you pretty much have seen everything in your life. Mm. I joined at 29, I turned 30 at the academy, so I thought I was pretty versed in life. But yeah, I think the life experience and how to deal with situations and see different situations, I think that sort of keeps you in good stead for the rest of your career.
Further on into your career, you were a liaison officer for the multicultural community. Can you tell us a little bit about that work?
Again, that's another field that I sort of got interested in early on in the piece. At one of my police stations at Melbourne East, I was given the mantle of being the Aboriginal liaison officer. So from there, I liked that work. And then the position for multicultural unit came up and I put in for that and was successful in the application. And yeah, it's a great job. Again, dealing with diversity, different issues. And, you know, some of those issues are actually dictated from world issues that happen around the globe. So yeah, it made it really interesting.
How did this lead on to you becoming the State Bicycle Coordinator?
Okay, well, first I had a 2-year stint with the Multicultural Liaison Unit, then a position came available for bike patrol at Melbourne Police Station. So I actually got that for 3 years. I was on the bikes out on patrol. From there, I went back to the Multicultural Liaison Unit just because I like that sort of thing. I like liaising. I'm a bit of a relator when it comes to people. From then on, I got this position, the State Bicycle Coordinator.
So you should know everything about it then, basically. Is that what you're telling me?
No. Do we ever know everything?
What exactly does the Victoria Police Bicycle Coordination Unit do?
Affectionately known as Bike Boy for the Victoria Police, I pretty much am the representative for all bicycle issues for Victoria Police. I am in charge, basically, of all the training and the kitting out, as in the uniform standards and training and policy procedures and all other things for bicycle patrols around the state. I also represent Victoria Police at coronial inquests and other things like that, and sit on several committees for government and deal with cyclists all around from different demographics. And, yeah, it's great. I love it.
I'm glad you get to deal with the cyclists and not me there, Artie. With the large increase in bicycles on our roads, what do you think the major challenges you are seeing for the future?
Well, look, there's many challenges. Bicycles being classed as vehicles means more vehicles on the road. So obviously, when we see the urban sprawl, even with motor vehicles, the one issue we have right across the board is infrastructure. So, you know, we've got to address those sort of things, increasing infrastructure, making it safe for all our road users out there. Also, of course, in a policing perspective, we see a lot more crimes in relation to bicycles. Bicycles are an expensive piece of equipment, some of them, so we're seeing an increase in theft. We've also, some of the crimes that are being committed, you know, some of our bad guys are getting away on bikes and using bikes as the getaway vehicle now rather than motor vehicles. So, yeah, look, we're seeing some big issues. But then again, you know, there's scope for getting out in the community and doing a few things to try to negate these issues.
Well, if we think about theft of bicycles as a topic, what sort of things can people do to prevent theft of their bicycle?
When you buy your bicycle, a good idea to note a few things like your serial number and so forth. Bike engraving is a great way to sort of at least give us a chance, if we stop someone, to have a look and maybe compare some notes and look at the person and say, well, hang on a second, this isn't your license number and so forth.
So we need to explain what bike engraving is.
Well, bike engraving basically is going to a police station. Usually the major police stations will have an engraver, and usually the crime prevention officer, or at Melbourne you've got the bike patrol there, and they have certain days where they engrave bicycles, and it's a matter of rocking up with your license or something identifiable that, because your licence number stays with you forever.
Mm.
And
what if you're under 18 and you don't have a licence?
Well, look, if you might have an ID card, a key pass or something like that, or even your key card. Yeah. Or
I always say to young people, use their parents' licence number.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we'll engrave that at the bottom of your bike, and there's an identifiable way of noting whose bike and so
And the
forth.
Really good thing about that is if you change address, your licence, you
absolutely.
Have to change
it's updated.
Address licence.
Correct.
Address on your licence, so yes.
That's
it
right,
follows
Scott.
You everywhere
We're
you go.
We're not second-guessing then, so, you know, we've got some sort of record, and it's really easy, as you know, to radio up and get someone's details in relation to a licence number. And of course, bike locks. Get a good quality bike lock if you're leaving it.
That's really
around,
important, isn't it? It's got to
be
a good quality one.
And, you know, that's a basic requirement, really. And yeah, get a good quality one, because
quick release wheels are a problem as well.
You know what? We haven't seen a big spate of the actual wheels being taken and so forth. But, you know, some people, and we do see them, some people take their wheels, take expensive bits of equipment off and walk them into their building and so forth. A lot of the infrastructure these days we're seeing, and a lot of the buildings that we're seeing, are actually providing for cyclists. So you can actually lock up your bike. And the same with car parks and stuff. So, that you know, they've got facilities like that as well.
I've seen a lot of people take their seat with them.
Yes.
Because at least then you can't ride away on the bike. Yeah. I guess.
And I see that there's a lot of, as you were talking about before, infrastructure around roads and bicycle paths also happening. Are you involved in much of the work around that?
Yeah, actually, I sit on a committee called the Victorian Bicycle Advisory Council, and it's some of the major players for bicycles and so forth. You know, I'll mention Vic Roads, because they play a real active role in infrastructure laws and assisting us as Victoria Police in actually getting the word out there for bicycles and safety. You know, I sit on these committees, and, you know, there's representatives from across the board, everything to do with cycling, whether they're retailers or even local councils, and we sit down and we analyse what's going on around the state, and, you know, we try to introduce a safer policies in relation to infrastructure.
How hard is it to police cyclists? Now, the reason I ask this is not because I'd like cyclists on the other side of the world rather than here. If I'm in a car, I'm 18, I have to build up a certain amount of hours to get my car experience. I then have to also know what the law is to drive that car. I have to pass a test. So then when I get pulled up by the police, I pretty much know I've done something wrong. But a cyclist doesn't need to go and get a test, but they still are allowed to ride on the road and are expected to know all the road laws. So how hard does that make your job when you've pulled up somebody that basically doesn't know, well, they've never had any training about the law in that respect? And I know Scotty likes to pull the line,
What's the line?
I don't know.
Save about, me, Scotty.
About not I think knowing, I'm trying to save Paul here.
About not knowing what the law is, there's no defence. What's that line?
Oh, ignorance is no defence.
Yeah, but still, it must make your job so difficult when you pull up somebody that has, you know, ridden between cars or has done a U-turn on a bike or has done any of these things, and they don't even know the law. How hard does that make your job?
My advice to those people is you shouldn't be in a vehicle if you haven't done your research. I'm going to use his line. You know, ignorance of the law is no excuse. And, you know, when we're talking younger adults, you know, we've got bicycle education now that's been revamped in primary school. We've got secondary school bicycle education, which is going to be introduced, which I've had input into. And they cover all the basic laws and so forth. Granted, we're not going to cover every child in Victoria, but there's parents as well. And we've all got a responsibility to our children. And I believe that's probably one of the real important
ones. One of the things that your area has put together is a website where people can go to learn about those sorts of things as well for the education.
That's right. And we'll plug it now. It's virtualbike.com.au. And it's the State Bicycle Coordination Unit's website. And it does. It covers laws. It covers a lot of issues. It's parents and kids. It covers a whole section on that. Security of your bike. You name it, it's in there. And we update it quite regularly. So the stuff on it is pretty up to date.
Jeff the Butcher asks, are bells compulsory?
Yes, they are. They're a minimum standard equipment for bicycles, yes.
And so if you get pulled up without one, you can unroadworthy bike?
Well, it's a penalty notice, which is a fine for $146.
So wow, without having a bell.
Absolutely.
So Jeff the Butcher, if you don't have one, get out there now.
Get a bell. Driving into a roundabout, the bike lane that's beside you disappears. There's a cyclist in my blind spot. I've got my indicator on to turn left, but the bike continues and nearly collides. Trevor wants to know, apart from bad language, who has the right of way?
Righto. Now, this is a very technical question, and it really depends on who is at the intersection first. As a motor car driver, in that situation, I would be a bit more cautious and maybe just slow up and let the bike rider go and go through. But if the bike rider was at the intersection first, then he has right of way. If the motor car driver was at the intersection first and the bicycle rider comes up on the left-hand side of a vehicle turning left, which he's not allowed to do, then it's the car has the right of way. So that one, depending on who was at the intersection first, but if you've got a bike in your blind spot and you're going to turn left, I would be slowing up and let the bike go because it's not worth the grief afterwards if anything happens.
If it's in your blind spot though, you wouldn't know he's there.
Head checks. We're all taught head checks. And you know, really when I'm turning left, even on a bike, I like to check and make sure there's nothing in my way.
Mm. Okay, David from Melbourne's got a couple of questions. I think he's opened up the bike law book. he says, are bikes allowed to travel between stationary cars, i.e. waiting at lights, to get to the bike boxes painted next to the traffic lights?
Yes, there are. There's no legislation in relation to lane splitting, as we call it, with motorbikes. I believe motorbikes aren't allowed to do that anymore.
Motorbikes can't do it.
We're a vehicle. That law is for motor vehicles, so we're still allowed to lane split. Again, when I say when you lane split, air of caution, because doors will open on you, passenger side, driver's side, it doesn't matter. I've seen taxis let their passengers out at an intersection and that could be a passenger's door and it's not a good situation to be in. So,
Another question from David says, as you're aware, vehicles are not permitted to cross single continuous white lines. Does this law also apply to bikes? And if so, are bikes and cars, for that matter, allowed to cross continuous bike lane lines?
That legislation in relation to the continuous line does apply to bikes. That's why in bike lanes you'll see it'll be continuous and then there'll be the dotted lines and that's where a motor vehicle can actually enter the bike lane. A motor vehicle can travel in the bike lane for a certain amount of distance. I think it's about 30 metres and then they have to get out basically. And that allows for people that, you know,
park and
pulling out. Yeah. You know, and there could be like an actual emergency where they need to pull over and so forth.
Well, they've got to avoid a car that's turning, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, look, there's allowances. But technically, no, you're not supposed to split that white line.
In some states, New South Wales, for instance, you can do a left-hand turn at a red light once you've come to a complete stop. Can cyclists do that here in Melbourne?
No. Simple. That's a simple answer, that one.
And it's important to note that for bicycle riders who go through red lights, the on-the-spot fine, the penalty notice, is exactly the same as it is for car riders. And the reason that the government and the police have asked for that to happen is because there are significant injuries and deaths that occur from bike riders going through red lights. So if the traffic light is red, you must stop and wait for it to turn green.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think David must be a cyclist, maybe, or thinking about becoming one. He also asks, when a bunch, as in two abreast, passes another bunch, can this be done two abreast?
Situation, say if it's a one-lane situation, no, because that's four abreast. You're not allowed to do that. In that instance, I would say the bunch passing the bunch that are two abreast would normally go into a single file. because you are allowed to be three abreast if you are passing. So that's what we'd like to see. Whether it necessarily happens, I can't really vouch for that.
Yeah, so you can't ride three abreast continuously?
No, no. You've got to...
Third person's got to be overtaking two.
Look, if we speak to someone that's been sitting three abreast for a long time, how long does it take to overtake? You've got to overtake and get over. So, but in saying that, if there's two lanes and you've got two cyclists riding two abreast and in the other lane you've got two other cyclists riding two abreast, they're two separate vehicles, so they can travel for a little while and then pass them. So,
Laurie asks, are bikes governed by speed limits? And if they do go over them, do they get fined or lose demerit points?
Bikes are governed by speed limits, the same speed limits as motor vehicles. I've yet to pull over a bicycle exceeding the speed limit.
I'll tell the story then. I know two people. One was a teacher at a secondary college who was riding to school one day down a hill, and he copped a ticket for speeding on his bicycle. And the second was a friend of mine way back when I was growing up in Frankston, riding down a road called Walker's Road in Mount Eliza, which is one of the steepest hills in the area. We used to love it. And the police were sitting there waiting for him. And he copped an on-the-spot fine as well.
Yeah. So there you go. With the bicycle patrol itself, we don't have a speedo that's actually calibrated, and so we're not going to be pulling people over for speeding. But obviously, your lasers and everything else that are out there, if you break the law, you cop the consequences.
I mean, it's difficult for a bike to get up to the 60 kilometre an hour or the 50 kilometre an hour, which is your sort of your minimum. But there are some hills around where you can get there.
And look, absolutely, in some areas are 40 kilometres an hour, that's which, you know, some road bikes can quite easily reach that, and you know, they could possibly break the law there.
Another question, what are police doing to improve respect between bikes and the car users?
Look, I think that's a two-way street, and we've had a lot of issues in relation to some negative media over the past 12 months, and it's been targeted at both motor car drivers and at cyclists. I think once we understand that and we lose the them and us mentality and we actually start to think that it is us on the road, we might get some headway. We are constantly dealing with motor car representatives and they're dealing with us, and as a Victoria Police we're on neutral ground here and we've got to look at all areas, and you know that includes all vulnerable road users and all road users itself, including pedestrians and so forth. It's just one of those battles that we'll continue to do, and as long as cycling keeps increasing, you know, the job will become more difficult, but in the same breath we've got to get to a certain peak where it's going to people will start to understand, and you know, awareness is there. I was riding on the weekend on Beach Road, and car drivers know that there's cyclists on Beach Road, and I've heard news bulletins saying watch out for cyclists on Beach Road. I think it's just one of those things that awareness is the best way to really get understanding as well. So
a question in from Sally of Eltham. She's talking about riding with her children on the footpath.
Yep.
Her child is just starting to learn, I'm assuming that it's a young age, 8, 9, and wants the child not to ride on the road, but also wants to make sure that her child is safe riding on the footpath. Can she ride on the footpath?
She can. Adult can accompany a child that's under 12 on the footpath, and I think that's it's a very important thing to do. And in relation to that law, you know, once they're 12, they're technically supposed to be on the road. Now, you know, policing-wise, or at being a parent, I have issues with that, but we'll leave that for some other time.
Speaking of issues, Artie, because I was going to ask you that exact question, so now that you've brought it up, do you have any say in any of the road laws that are passed? Do they consult with you when some of these laws are passed? Do you ever look at a law and go, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, look, we are. Myself, as the bicycle representative, when the road rules has just been revamped, I had input into road rules and so forth and what I think's a fair deal and what's not and what could be achieved, what can't be achieved. Whether they listen to me or not, that's another thing. But, you know, consultation certainly happens, and it happens quite regularly because issues will arise, or unfortunately we might have a coronial inquest and, you know, a law's debated in relation to that or something. So
is there a feedback line or a feedback website that we can actually give some feedback to some of these laws that are possibly making?
They would be on your government websites, obviously.
Because I'd like to say one right here and now.
Go for the
bike boxes that have been put in.
Yep.
Okay. I don't like them at all, basically because I'm travelling along, say, Bridge Road, for instance.
Yep.
You're very conscious of that bike being there, so you work very hard to get past that bike so you don't hit the bike, and then you're in front of them. Get to the lights, lights stop, the bikes then come up alongside of your car and then get in front of you again. So then you've got to do all that work again. And then you're stuck behind a bicycle. Frustration. So I'm wondering if they can do a bike light in, like a go light, because you know how the buses get to go ahead of the cars,
yep.
Trams get to go ahead of the cars. Maybe they need like a little bike green light, which gives that bike, you know, at least 5 seconds ahead of the car, so when the car then pulls in behind it, it can actually pass it, and then there's no frustration between the two drivers.
That's a fair point, and that's some of the feedback I get a lot from drivers. They've done a lot of work to get around and so forth. A bicycle is a vehicle, and granted, sometimes it's a very slow vehicle. I would say to drivers to treat it as a slow vehicle, and you have to negate and get around it, and you get to the traffic lights, and unfortunately, because of the bike lane, he's going to get in front of you again. Well, then some prior thinking to when you get to that intersection, maybe change lanes or prepare yourself for this again. I can take those sort of points on board, and when we speak at these Victorian Bicycle Advisory Council committees and we talk about the infrastructure and how we can improve it, we talk about lighting systems, and because technically, at law, a cyclist cannot ride across a ped crossing, but in some instances, it's a safe way to go. So how do we negate that? Well, we put a bike light there. There's my point, exactly. So we can mention these sort of things and say, well, you know, how can we negate the angst between drivers by a simple light? So, yeah, I'll take that on board, Paul, and see what I can do for you.
And only the other thing, I think, is that, is that all bike riders should have to do a licence if they're going to ride on the road. That's what I reckon. All right, question in from Adrian, who says, along Beach Road at lights, they turn green and bikes have scooted in front of his car, tunnelling the wind from the cars in front. They really push themselves to go fast as they can and in the wind tunnel directly in front of him or another vehicle. Is this legal?
No, it's illegal. It's legal for 200 metres. Any more than 200 metres, it's what we call motor pacing. And there is actually a law for that. So they're not allowed to do that for more than 200 metres. So, yeah, it is illegal.
Scotty?
Well, I think it's actually been a very popular segment and lots of questions. We might have to ask Artie in later on in the year and do this again because there's obviously a lot of interest in this.
Yes, maybe we could do a talkback session where people can actually call in Artie and they can throw more curlies at you like
fantastic.
I have done today.
Fantastic.
Wonderful. In front of me is a little brochure called Riding with Others.
It's the Code of Conduct for Training Cyclists, and this all came about due to a fatality that we had, unfortunately, on Beach Road many years ago, and we were told, what are you guys doing about Beach Road and issues down there, which are going great down there. The cyclists are doing okay. We're not having many issues at all. It was with our partners, the Cycling Promotion Fund, Cycle Sport Victoria, which is one of the biggest groups for training cyclists down there in Triathlon Victoria. We got together and it's a bit of a guide in relation to your code of conduct, basically. It's not law or anything like that. It's just something they can read and get some tips in relation to what infringements are out there, how to ride in bunches, because it's actually quite...
It's a technique.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're looking at a bunch of cyclists travelling at, say, even 45, 50 kilometres an hour. That is a big vehicle that's travelling. So, you know...
Where can people find the brochure?
They can get it on the Victoria Police website.
Police.vic.gov.au.
Yeah, absolutely. It's there, and I think it's on the virtual bike website. If not, I will be putting it on there shortly because I'll have to update a couple of things on that, and that was virtualbike.com.au. It's really worthwhile getting onto that site. I'm not saying it because it's my website, but it's got a lot of handy tips on cycling.
It does, and every road law there is for cyclists is listed on that website.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, because I believe that you were on it earlier.
Have a look at it earlier on. Yeah, it's a very good website.
Thanks.
Jenny from Somerville had the question, can an adult ride on the footpath with a child? You said yes.
Yep.
As long as they're under the age of...
The child is under the age of 12. But as I was saying, there's a bit of leeway in relation to that because we don't want our children on the road
and
too
early.
And
some kids are more mature than others.
Absolutely,
as well.
Absolutely.
And is the speed limit 10 kilometres per hour in designated bicycle lanes?
It is, provided it's signed, but very hard to enforce. Mm. If in any crowded area, a shared path, I would be travelling very carefully.
Sergeant Artie Lavos, the State Bicycle Coordinator for Victoria Police, thank you so much for joining us here on Joy.
Paul, Scotty, thank you.
If you have any knowledge concerning any crime, call Crime Stoppers on 1800 333 000 or visit crimestoppers.com.au. If it's an emergency, always call 000.
The Victoria Police GLOWS, Crime Stoppers and Joy 94.9, working together to help make our community safe.
Joy, everywhere in the world. Listen online. joy.org.au.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.